Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 170.
This week on the podcast, hey guys, what does it mean that John Boehner is being remembered by Democrats as a great compromiser? Should we be concerned?
Scott Walker can't stand the figurative and literal heat at the Reagan Library GOP debates.
And Florida's entry into the GOP race is on the rise. It's just not Jeb Bush.
The Democratic poll numbers are fucking bananas.
The Pope's visit finally puts the spotlight on the greatest celebrity water thief in American history. Somebody elected this person to office, by the way.
And who would have guessed that the makers of the adorable Beetle hatchback would be up to something so nefarious? Only students of German history, I guess.
And finally, brazen sea turtle riding is on the rise in, you guessed it, Florida.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Which is soon to be looking
much
different and beautiful.
Yeah, we're about to upgrade our website.
That's right.
So stay tuned for that. That's coming in the next couple weeks.
If we live to do so. Because currently we're sweating to death.
We're literally sweating to death.
If you never hear this podcast.
It's because we died.
Because we died while creating it. For you, dear listeners.
We are sitting with two ice packs.
Right, that we're going to be putting on our veins at various strategic points in the podcast.
It's the only way we're going to get through this. You guys, global warming is real.
It's so real.
It couldn't be any realer in Southern California.
If snow proves that it's not real, then this heat proves that it is real.
That's right. We've usurped the snow means it's not real argument at this point.
The heat is winning.
The heat is winning. It's too fucking hot. It's really hot. It's September. And I get that it gets hot in September in Southern California. We're in a desert. The Santa Ana's come. I get it.
It's muggy.
It's humid here. We're in a desert.
Yeah.
This has to stop.
My air conditioner is not working.
My air conditioner has never been working. So that is another problem that we're
people
facing.
People like to tell you that you don't need an air conditioner in Southern California.
That's a thing. We're not liars until this year.
That's a thing that landlords everywhere like to tell you when you're looking at apartments.
I was guilty.
But you get a great cross breeze. Fuck off. The cross breeze is not helping anyone.
Guilty of telling people that until 2 months ago when I realized that my cross breeze is not doing shit. It's blowing a hot breeze through my apartment.
That's exactly what it's doing.
Oh my God.
And it's not helping the humidity at all. Cross breeze can't do anything to help the humidity.
This is a nightmare. I just bought a new jacket. I want to be able to wear it. I'm excited about it.
You know how much I love sweaters.
It's like at what point can we just dispense with this excessive humidity and heat situation?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Like, when are we going to stop being punished?
I don't like it one bit.
For being so great.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Anyway, meanwhile, we've been gone for a few weeks.
We've been gone for a while.
And that's because Lila was crushing it
in
Washington, D.C.,
by
the way.
You guys, I did it. Yeah.
It's all
downhill from here because I've now done it.
That's right.
And if you're wondering what it is, which you shouldn't be, because it's clear once I say what I'm talking about that you should have known what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I spent a full day with Jon Stewart.
That's right.
And in that day, I met Elizabeth Warren.
That's right. And Nancy Pelosi.
Another congressperson introduced me to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. You went up to a congressperson and said, "Hello, congressperson. Please introduce me to Nancy Pelosi."
And he was like, "Of course."
And they did.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
boom.
I did it. I don't need more at this point. I think that's all you can ask, really.
Yeah.
If the heat takes me now, at least I got
You'll
that out of
that.
The way.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean,
what will I have done? Damn it.
Well, you went to the Bernie Sanders headquarters and got me a free T-shirt.
That's right, I did.
So at least we have that.
Yeah.
Oh, you walked him into the Iowa State Fair, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were busy meeting Bernie.
That's true.
I didn't get to meet any presidential contenders while I was in Washington because they were all preparing.
They were in Iowa.
No, the Democrats were in Iowa. The Republicans were in California, in Los Angeles, in fact, preparing for the Reagan Library debates.
Right. Where they learned that global warming was real.
Yeah.
Because
if the Republican Party continues to claim that global warming is not real after their experience at the Reagan Library,
It was the shiniest debate ever.
It was not even shiny. It was like everyone looked diabolical. They were sweating in a way that made it seem like they had committed crimes and were now under, giving
testimony.
People kept comparing it to Nixon Kennedy. And, this was like if everyone was Nixon in the debate. Except Carly Fiorina.
Right.
Because she didn't sweat a drop.
And I have the answer.
We know the answer, yeah.
It's Botox.
Botox.
She stops also didn't, you from sweating.
She didn't emote
People are getting
a drop
Botox
either.
Inserted into their armpit sweat glands all over the place because they don't want to
That sounds
sweat.
Like you would then later explode of disgusting sweat.
Well.
I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I don't
anyway,
know.
So she was safe. It's why she won that debate.
Exactly. Right, because she wasn't flustered by having water dripping from her face.
That's
you know who didn't win that debate because of the sweating issue? Ted Cruz. That man already looks like he's looking into your soul. But, like, with the addition of him being that sweaty, it was like... And, like, poor Marco Rubio, we know he doesn't deal with dehydration well.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, he came out, he did pretty well considering. We're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get there in a second.
It was too exciting to... No, that was not the big news. It was too exciting to knock it out immediately, though.
Yeah, right.
In any case, before we move on, I was in D.C. in support of the Zadroga Act, which is the 9/11 health bill.
Yes.
If you live in New York State or hopefully outside of New York State, anywhere in the country, please call or email your representatives and let them know that this is an issue that affects people all over the nation, including myself.
Right.
I live in California. I know many other people who benefit from this program who live in California.
Right.
And who need this program to continue. It's about to expire in October, so we really need to get the ball moving. And for reasons we're about to tell you, it's
who
not
knows
a great
what
time.
Could happen. It's not a great time.
It's not a great time.
Because besides the fact there's a lot of other issues to deal with, we now have a retiring Speaker of the House.
An ousted retiring Speaker of the House.
Yes.
He wasn't just like, you know what, I'm getting old and I want to spend more time with my grandkids.
No.
That's not what happened here.
No.
John Boehner, one day after meeting the Pope, and maybe the Pope was there to do the people's work, I don't know, decided that he was going to, like, just suddenly leave office. Or not leave the Speaker post.
Yes.
So...
Well, and office. He's retiring.
Right, he's retiring. Yeah. But I mean, like, he announced it, the Speaker thing was was a shock.
Right.
He had said previously that he was only going to be there for two terms, and then when Eric Cantor got primaried out,
he stayed
because he was like, what is happening now?
Yeah.
But so, no one really knew what his plans were, but no one really expected him to suddenly announce his retirement this way. So now, John Boehner is a lame duck Speaker.
Yes.
And crazy things are getting said about him, most of them oddly complimentary, and many of them coming from Democrats. So we're very concerned about where this is all heading.
Yeah, we are. Now, he has... You know how I love to accidentally say that I feel bad for people?
Yes.
But, I mean, you know...
He's been in a tough spot.
He's been in a tough spot, you know.
Poor guy.
Right.
Poor guy.
Right.
Who feels very inspired by his life story, so not that tough of a spot, because he's surpassed all of his expectations.
That's right. That's right.
But... The poor guy has been stuck in the middle of an inter-party war.
Yes.
That's been going on for some time now.
Yeah. Now, you and I think that it would be fairly easy for him to just tell all of those fuckers to fuck off.
Correct.
But
he's scared now after the Cantor episode, probably.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, that's the only way that I can explain that.
Yeah.
But what's been crazy is that Democrats, as they've given their remarks about his leaving office, I was about to say his demise. He's not dead. He's in perfectly good health. And liberal media as well have all been saying it's so sad to see a great compromiser leave office.
Which is like, when
Which is the
did that happen?
Exact opposite thing of what he's actually been up to this whole time.
He has been...
The greatest non-compromiser.
He has made it clear through his own words that his main goal is to do nothing. To obstruct things.
Yeah.
He never intended to do so, even in 2008 when he was not the Speaker of the House, because the Democrats had the House. He was still trying to block everything, and that was after the Democrats basically had what many would call a mandate. He was, you know, I mean, he has never wanted to work with the Democrats. He has never wanted to work with the president. So I think we should all just call him. We can feel bad for him in the situation that he was put in with his own party, but beyond that... He was a giant fuck-up.
Well, didn't he know he was being sacrificed to begin with, though? I mean, we talked about this when he got appointed in the first place.
Yeah.
He was being sacrificed.
Yeah.
He was a guy who was potentially going to be ousted in this manner because he was put in there to basically, like, kind of blunt the, you know, blunt this, like, horrible Tea Party contingent who, like, won't do anything cooperative at all.
Right. Yeah.
In any case, he...
And it's interesting, too, because that Tea Party contingency really hates him because
it's
of
all,
the tactics
it's
that
all
he went about.
Procedural
because,
hate.
Like we said, I mean, he has been against the president and the Democrats at every turn. It's not that they disagree with him ideologically much. It's that they think that he should just be doing way more bonkers things
thing
to, like, the ends to the means to the end.
The thing that they can't be appeased.
No.
They're not reasonable and they can't be appeased. So there's no end game with them.
Right.
There's no way for them to actually get what they want to happen.
Right.
There's no way for the Speaker of a party that includes more people than just them to act in the way that they want him to act.
Right.
Especially because they only make up 30% of the Republican Party.
Yes.
You heard that correctly. Not 30% of Congress.
Yes. 30%
of the Republican Party. The Tea Party caucus is not a majority of the party.
Not even close.
They are just somehow controlling it with threats of primarying people.
Right, exactly.
Literally, that's what's happening.
That's it.
This is the whole game. Is they?
It's working.
It's working. They're blackmailing the rest of the Republican Party, some of whom are not, I would say, unevil, but are more reasonable.
Right.
To, you know, who would otherwise vote for reasonable person things that are common sense things.
Yeah.
Like funding the government at a basic level.
Right.
Like, they are taking these weird stances on minor ideological issues and making it impossible for anyone to move forward with threats of primaries.
Yes.
Basically. So, they're blackmailing everyone.
Yeah.
And they were blackmailing Boehner. And Boehner was always sort of a scapegoat for their, for their inability to actually, like, get any action on
this
thing.
Right, exactly. Because even right now, they're furious with him right now because he's not wanting to shut down the government over funding of Planned Parenthood.
P.S. That didn't work for them
that's
the last time.
That's not going to work.
That's how
I know.
They lost
that's the thing.
Control in the first place.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, if you're thinking that the fact that he's leaving is all of a sudden just some, you know, cure-all for the problems in Congress.
Unfortunately, the reason everyone's complimenting him up a storm is because
it's
things
gonna
are going to
get worse. That's right.
Because there's no way that they appoint someone better, given that he, as a extreme conservative and ideological match for them, was still not what they were looking for.
Right.
And they apparently hold not the purse strings, but just like the world strings.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of big things that are going to be coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have a speaker. There's probably going to be a battle for who the speaker is because, you know, we think most everyone seems to think that Kevin McCarthy has sort of like the inside track for it. He is the majority leader right now, but there's going to be some other, you know, Steve Scalise is going to run against him. He's going to be crazy. And
met
then,
him
and,
while I was in Washington.
Oh, you did?
He's a creeper.
I bet. But, you know, there's a funding bill that's coming up right now, which is basically like a stopgap that only gets you through, I think, the end of October or something like that.
And then
but there's
they're
a
planning
huge...
in, at the end of October, that's when I think Ted Cruz is planning to shut down the government. So there's...
Right, because there's going to be another debt ceiling thing that's going to be happening.
Once again, the fall is the worst time of year.
In December. It's like happening in the middle of December. So there's already sort of like fear that there's going to be like a, you know, a Christmas shutdown. And there, I mean, it's just... Not having a speaker right now is not the best time to not have a speaker right now. And even though John Boehner was not the world's greatest speaker, everyone seems to be a little concerned.
Yes.
You know, the stock markets went
wonky,
crazy on Friday because a lot of people were sort of immediately, like their heads went straight to like, oh God, the government's going to get shut down again. So it's an interesting
great fiscal conservatives.
Time right now. Yes.
It's an interesting time. In Washington, everyone is feeling a lot of dread about what this is going to bring. Except conservatives who are like super excited about their victory.
Yeah, because they think they won.
Exactly.
Which they did.
I guess they did. This is going to be problematic partially because of the threat that his ousting sort of implicitly creates because it means that anyone who does any degree of compromising is going to be sort of in the hot seat.
Well, right, exactly. There was a quote from David Axelrod that I thought put it really well. He said, having been hoisted to the speaker's chair by what was essentially a revolt, the next speaker will not have the freedom to compromise with the president. This group is not installing him to pursue compromise and mutual cooperation. So basically what they're saying is like, you know, they effectively kicked John Boehner out.
Yeah.
So the next person can't just do what John Boehner did or else they are also going to be kicked out.
Here's what John Boehner could do, though. Is he could have a fucking epic lame duck session.
Yeah, he could.
He could just tell them to go fuck
and
themselves.
And presidential aides are hoping that maybe that
game
is
that.
What he will do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because what does he gain at this point from playing
Nothing.
Ball with these people?
No. And he has never really got that. You know, there always was sort of like talk of like a great compromise. Remember this? Like whether it was like either on taxes or whatever. And he never really got that. They never got that done.
No.
Whether it was his fault, the president's fault, that could be debated until the cows come home. But he doesn't really have anything necessarily to show for himself other than doing nothing, which is what
Crying
he said he wanted to do anyway.
And
but
doing nothing.
You know, the presidential aides are sort of talking up whether maybe they can get this infrastructure bill passed because that has been long talked about between both parties, and they seem to think that that's something that they could actually maybe get funded if they could decide to do it.
I think that there is some room right now in the Republican Party because look at what's happening in their primaries in the presidential race.
I know.
The people that are polling really high are not people that stand for this ultra-conservative platform.
Right.
Donald Trump is a fucking weird progressive bigot.
Right.
Like, He's releasing a tax plan tomorrow where he's going to raise taxes on the wealthy.
Yeah.
And people are going for it.
Yeah.
Like, the party that he is leaving office in is not the same party that the Tea Party got elected in.
No, that's true.
And yeah. the Tea Party is about to create even more havoc because their next goal is to go after Mitch McConnell.
Right.
So they are eating their own left, right, and center.
They are.
Which is sort of glorious to watch because
totally.
Those were the idiots that let them get into this position in the first yeah. place. I mean, they were the ones who were out of touch enough with their own, you know, with their own voting public to let this happen.
Yeah.
And again, we remind you, the Tea Party started in opposition to Bush-era policies,
Bush, right.
not in opposition to Obama. So right. they really could, this was already a revolt within their own party, and they let it take the party because they were so embarrassed about how badly yeah. they had done.
Yep.
So this whole thing is a mess of their own making.
It totally is.
But let's talk a little about Kevin McCarthy, who looks like the potential, this is who Boehner would like to see installed.
Yes. And he wouldn't necessarily go so far as to endorse him, but no. he did say that he would, what did he say, make a great, wonderful speaker,
yeah, he would
great
make
speaker,
a
or something like
great
that.
Next
yeah.
speaker. He might not be tan enough for the job. We don't know
we
for
don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's no way, and he might be willing to tan for the job, though.
Yeah,
he's kind
knows?
Of a schmoozer.
He's from California, so he could get some sun.
He might already be tan enough. He didn't yeah. look tan enough in
no,
pictures, but
I don't
that's...
Think he, I don't think he is.
That's not to say he has no experience with the tanning
booth,
guys.
But he's from Bakersfield, which is just
it's
gross.
Sun-baked, horrible.
Gross place, by the way.
Yeah.
yeah. If we think it's hot here,
right.
try recording the podcast.
I don't want to go. I don't want to know anything about Bakersfield in yeah. this weather.
Anyway, but you know, he is obviously he is technically the one.
He's like
next
in
line, but there, you know, he's got some issues because obviously the right feels emboldened, so they're going to run someone against him.
Right.
Probably Steve Scalise, who's actually third in line and has been in Congress longer. That's the other thing
yeah.
that McCarthy has potentially going against him is that he has only been in Congress since 2006. He sort of like came up as a rapid, you know, he came up through the ranks very quickly. He was kind of, he was like called one of the young guns in 2010, yeah. where it was like he was a big fundraiser and it was like him and Paul Ryan and, Eric Cantor, who's now no longer there. But I mean, he sort of like had a rapid rise through the yeah. ranks. He's only been in
he's
Congress
like
for 10 years.
He's like a career schmoozer.
Yes.
He's not well liked, but he's not disliked by anyone.
Right.
He doesn't really stand for anything. He doesn't have any sort of like key issues that he
right.
works on.
Yeah.
He's just like a guy who we know likes to be elected to office.
Yeah. And he would be the least experienced speaker since 1891.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
I see Steve Scalise trying to jump into that spot. Steve Scalise, we should remind you, he was the guy from Louisiana who has ties to the KKK.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, if you're...
So, he might have more of an inside track than we think.
If you're wondering what he's up to, it's right. hanging with the KKK.
Yeah. So, but Tom Price of Georgia, who's the Budget Committee Chairman,
right.
and also Kathy McMorris Rogers, who we remember, she did the...
She's kind of like their new woman.
Right, because she did the State of the Union response,
yeah.
not this last time, because that was with Joni Ernst, but she's done it before.
She's done the, yeah, the
so
Tea Party
sort of is also,
right?
like, no, yeah. I think she did,
oh, she
the,
did the,
I think she did the regular
one. I can't
one.
Remember.
Yeah. But anyway, she's the Republican Conference chairwoman, so there are going to be a few people running for this, so it'll be yeah. interesting to see how it plays out, but it does seem sort of like Steve Scalise could potentially mount the biggest
challenge
because he's the next in line behind McCarthy, and he's
also
sort of, he has the conservative cred that McCarthy may not.
He might be tan enough.
He's weird looking.
He's weird looking.
Yeah.
And up close and in photos.
Yeah, you saw him.
I saw him. It was a weird meeting because we were invited into the room they were meeting in, but not the meeting itself.
Yeah.
John Stewart and a couple responders went into the meeting itself.
Right.
While we sat direct in the same room, just like in another seating area in the room and listened.
Yeah.
And Steve Scalise heard the whole sad story of the first responders,
mm-hmm.
then got up and showed everyone the historical documents in the room really proudly and seemed to have not in any way been affected by the story of, like, these men with stage 4 cancer who had, like, saved lives on 9/11. Like,
yeah, sure.
It was, like, it was a very weird moment.
Oh, God.
Not as weird as a couple other moments that we had with Republican House and Senate members, but... Nonetheless, moving on. Guys, while I was there, the very day that I was in Washington, in fact, doing this lobbying, was the day that we had the glorious GOP debate number two.
Number two, which we're not going to spend a ton of time on because
it
was a while ago,
and
you remember it because it was covered to within an inch of its life, and it was glorious, and you probably watched it. But
it had to be because it was 3 million hours long, and it needed to be summarized in the media because nobody sat all the way through.
No.
It was the longest debate in the history of people talking.
It was real long, yes.
And that is especially unfortunate because they were standing
they
the
were
whole
all
time.
Sweating.
And it was hot in there.
They were at the Reagan Library. It was hot. They were standing in front of Air Force One. Like,
We have a photo of ourselves there.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
We should post that.
Yeah, we should.
In honor of
the debate.
The debate. Yes.
But there were a few sort of, you know, people who emerged from
There's
that.
There's always emergences and non-emergences.
Right. Carly Fiorina had emerged from the first debate from the kids'
first
table.
Big
and this
boy
was her
debate.
This was her big, yes, exactly. And she emerged from this, and we're going to get to some poll numbers, and she's doing quite well for herself because she had a few key moments in that debate. One of which is kind of an ongoing controversy, but
she sounded very put together and articulate. She was Michelle Bachmanning the whole time.
Yeah, she's good, even if she's good when, I mean, she made everything up.
Right. She literally invented every fact she spoke.
That's right. She sounded
authoritative as she spoke those facts.
That's right.
There was an ongoing controversy because she told a very specific story about her own child dying because of marijuana overdoses or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a gateway drug.
It was a gateway
drug. It was
a specific story because they were talking about the Colorado laws, and it was all intended so that everyone could bash Rand Paul.
Yeah.
She talks about how marijuana was a gateway drug for her poor child who died of an overdose.
Yes. Now, and she also talked about the, that's where she wove her crazy tale about live fetuses being kept alive from those videotapes for the Planned Parenthood tapes, which
somehow
does not exist.
Exactly.
Like every independent fact checker has watched all 12 hours of these tapes, and what she talks about having seen
is a thing she saw in her own mind only.
Is a thing that she made up, and she is still running with it.
Yeah.
But she will not admit that that is not a thing that
she was, however, forced to admit that she doesn't have any kids. The child that she was talking about was a stepdaughter it was the stepdaughter of an ex-husband, an ex-husband, who she had only really known as an adult. And who died of a prescription drug overdose.
Oh, sure.
That was in no way related to marijuana use.
That sounds about right.
So the whole story was fabricated.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio also kind of emerged.
He did a pretty good job. I've said it on this podcast before. He's the one who potentially keeps me up at night.
Me too. That's after this debate. I thought he looked too clownish at the first one, but after this debate, I'm concerned that he's the sort of chosen option.
Right.
Because unlike Carly Fiorina, he didn't appear to invent as many facts or any facts. He just is evil and sounds articulate.
Right. Yes.
That's what he's up to, which is what they need for their own selves.
Right.
It's not what America needs, but it's what the Republican Party needs in order to not be fools. But I feel also with him, he has always sort of been this potential rising star, and he always fucks it up. So there's always the chance with him that he'll totally fuck it up.
Yeah.
You know, he does embarrassing things.
Yes, that's true.
He's humorless, and he's not that cool.
He's very humorless.
So, and I think, unlike, even Jeb seems slightly more charismatic. Jeb is
maybe
a wet blanket of a nobody.
Yeah.
But Marco Rubio is not charismatic. He's so serious-seeming that he doesn't seem like he'd be fun to hang out with.
No, that's true.
And I think that is something, it's not something that you need in order to convince people that you're qualified to be president.
Right.
But it is something you need in order to make people sort of invested in your story.
Yeah.
And that, I think, could be his biggest challenge.
Yeah, I agree.
But he is the one that's sort of concerning me the most, especially since Scott Walker might as well have just burrowed his way through the floor at that debate and never come back.
Yeah, which is what he did.
Because
he's now gone.
Exactly. Scott Walker dropped out immediately. Scott Walker, as you recall, the one who was going to win the nomination just a few months ago, has been on a slow and sad decline, mostly related to the fact that people finally got to see what he looked like and sounded like in person.
Yeah, I think you have never been more right about anything with Scott Walker. And so right about it that I don't think that he actually... A lot of people were talking when he decided to drop out that he, you know, he could come back in 4 years. He could be the next guy. But he has he's just too doofy looking.
He's dopey.
And there's nothing that you can do about that. It's the same problem that Rick Perry has.
He looks like Opie.
Rick Perry slapped a pair of glasses on and tried to come back and be an intelligent person.
And
but
it was no.
We saw through that, and he has also dropped out too. But because everybody last time was oh, well, Rick Perry could make a comeback. It's no, Rick Perry is an idiot. And
he's
Scott
a dumb
Walker
person.
Is
dopey.
Also an idiot, but he's dopey.
Yeah.
And that, you can't fix that in 4 years.
No, you also can't fix that.
That's a lifelong problem.
Exactly.
And it's not his fault,
you can't
necessarily
fix that. Period. No,
but
it's the fault of genetics. It's unfortunate.
It is
the reason Chris Christie's not, Chris Christie's also not going to be the president.
That's right.
For reasons that aren't fair to him necessarily. It's not his fair that he's overweight. It's not fair to, you know, it's not his fault that he's overweight. That's genetics. But that's also a thing that just when you talk about the things that sort of invest people in your case.
Right.
As the as a presidential candidate, that's one of the things that make that makes people not vote for you. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But like, this is, he's just, Scott, you just, dopey people don't get to be the president.
That's right.
The world discriminates against dopey-looking people.
Yeah, but it was interesting because both of them didn't necessarily go direct. Although I think Rick Perry did actually go directly at Trump because he was sort of doing that
Rick
anyway.
Rick Perry went in directly at Trump.
Right, he did. Well, he did. Yeah, exactly. But both of them sort of
made sideways comments
about Trump, and also said that more people should be dropping out. And I think we will probably see that because obviously
who's going to be next? I'm so excited. It's all I want to talk about.
Well, and what's interesting is like, I think people were surprised about Scott Walker, but Scott Walker ended up being a money problem. And what the problem was is
and wasn't
that
he the Koch candidate? I
yes,
think
the he
Koch
was,
brothers
but I think,
left him, right?
I think what
or they were looking to leave
I think
him.
What ultimately happened, though, is that he, you know, sort of like shot to the top in Iowa. And immediately, once he had sort of this like front runner status, he staffed the hell up. He had a huge operation in Iowa. And then the money started to run dry, and he had this giant operation. And even if his super PAC is being funded by the Koch brothers, he can't pay his campaign with that money. So he was sort of almost, it almost was bad for him that he became an immediate front runner in Iowa.
Well, that's bad for anyone in this race.
Right. It's like, and that's the thing. It was sort of like, you know, because I was like, well, why hasn't Bobby Jindal dropped out? But like, Bobby Jindal is just probably he's waiting for his moment. And he's also just, he's probably a two-person operation, just like flying around the country.
He's him and a campaign manager and always buying his plane tickets.
Right, exactly. So he can go on until the end of days, basically. Because like, he doesn't have things to write checks for.
I'm convinced that Pataki could be running for president for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
He's just one guy traveling around the country.
Right.
He's not even traveling around the country. Right. He's just a guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just showing up at debates.
I know. Same with John Kasich. He's not traveling around the country either. He's only in New Hampshire.
No, exactly.
Or at a debate that he has to show up for. Right. But there are a lot of these people who don't have... They don't have operations, so they can stay in the race because they don't have to pay for anything.
No.
I think that you're going to see more of the middle tier people like a Chris Christie or Rand Paul, potentially. People have been talking about him. Those are going to be the people who drop out before some of the loser candidates because the loser candidates they're not running real operations.
Also, if we learned anything from the last cycle, it's that every loser candidate gets their day. And there's no incentive for a loser candidate who has no operation to pay for to drop out before their moment.
Right, exactly.
I mean, Herman Cain got a moment.
That's right.
It's happening out there, guys.
That's right.
There was a moment where Herman Cain might have been the nominee.
Right.
So, like, they're all waiting for their time.
That's right.
And they have no incentive to not wait for their time.
Totally.
Because
why not?
I mean, that's how these giant GOP, you know, campaigns work.
Yeah, exactly. But we've got some post-Walker debate and post-Walker dropout polling, and it is interesting.
Yeah.
Trump is still leading. But he is now only at 21%. So he's basically tied with Ben Carson. We saw this sort of going into the debate a little bit. And,
a lot
of people think that Trump has maybe finally lost the momentum. I mean, he was very rude in that debate. Carly Fiorina had that jab. He had that moment where he was asked at that town hall meeting about Obama being a Muslim. And he didn't, and all of the other candidates sort of like ragged on him for that. It seems as though maybe he's, while still in the lead, people have maybe had their moment with him.
Yeah. I'm surprised Ben Carson, after two debate performances, is still on the rise because he never reads as anything other than bewildered.
No, I know.
At those debates.
And a slow talker.
He's a slow talker. You guys.
Maybe people like, maybe Republicans like him because he's the only one that talks slow enough for them to be able to process their thoughts with.
That's got to be part of it, is he's the slowest talker by far on that stage.
Yeah.
And he's not saying anything of value. But here's the thing about when people are talking really slow. You often forget what the beginning of their sentence was by the time you get to the end. So you only need a good end to your sentence if you're a slow talker. You do not need a good beginning.
Yeah, that's right.
So it doesn't matter what he says.
Yeah.
You know, just slow talking around.
Yeah, so those two are tied. And then you've got Fiorina and Rubio.
The power duo of previously irrelevant candidates.
Right, exactly. At 11%.
That's the debate duo.
Not terribly far behind, yes. No. And the debate duo making their move now. And then you've got Bush... still at 7%. And Kasich at 6%, which is interesting because this is a national poll. This is easily the best that he's done in a national poll. He's been polling okay in New Hampshire.
I think that he is probably siphoning off a lot of, like, reasonable person votes who are just, like, he came across as tough but vaguely reasonable at the debate.
Yes, he did.
And that's all, and that's why he's not that exciting of a candidate.
Yes.
But I think that he is maybe someone to look out for also because unlike Rubio and unlike Carson and definitely unlike Bush, he has a personality.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy who has an identifiable shtick.
He's got the folksiest charm of the whole lot of this group.
And he's kind of, he's got that Chris Christie sort of like, you know, he's kind of gruff and he's not always polite.
Right.
And, you know, Republicans seem to respond to that in some measure, just not in the sort of like tri-state area way that Chris Christie does it. But I think that unlike a lot of these front runners who are just like blank slate personalityless drones, he's the only one in this race currently who can in any way, or in these, you know, in this sort of top six, who can in any way compete with Trump on the personality basis.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And then you've got Cruz at 5% right behind him.
What? It's, stop and then, this, guys.
I know. And then no
stop,
one else.
Stop supporting Ted Cruz. I know.
And then no one else has more than
3%. Do not do that.
Yeah. And you know what is interesting about Ted Cruz? Because, you know, you just got through talking about, you know, peaking at the right time. Everyone is going to have their moment. Ted Cruz is probably going to have his moment toward the end of the year when he gets to potentially shut down the government again, which is not long before people are going to start voting in Iowa and New Hampshire.
It could be good or bad.
I mean, like, with the Republican primary voters in Iowa.
I think it could
be
good in Iowa. I think it could be bad New Hampshire.
I agree. Yes.
And I think that he's someone who doesn't make it out of New Hampshire necessarily because I don't.
I mean, like, he might go to South Carolina.
He might go to South Carolina.
Right. And Texas, I think, is on Super Tuesday. So, assuming that he can continue to fund
race,
his operation.
But, like, he's not, he's like a Huckabee.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, he's like a nutbag who, like, does
who's
well
nowhere
in Iowa.
Here on this list, by the way.
No. Huckabee. Huckabee also, I don't think, is going to have his moment in this round. He's being an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
He could have had his moment. Like, his moment, if Kim Davis wasn't his moment, then he wasn't going to have a moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If that wasn't resonating with people, then his shtick is not resonating with people, and it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had his moment. He won Iowa.
Yeah.
He's a man who's already had a moment.
I know. Yeah. Yes.
Just
yes, he did.
Get over your... Stop having...
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it.
But speaking of Trump, and you sort of mentioned this already, but...
He's releasing his tax plan proposal tomorrow.
Yeah.
And his tax plan proposal sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
First of all, here's what he has to say about it.
Yeah.
It will be very long on policy and will be a great plan.
Sure.
With a major reduction in taxes for the middle class. So we know for sure... Sorry, just hit the mic. Got excited.
Yeah.
That it's going to be long on policy... Whatever that means.
Yes.
And great. So that's a good sign.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, hilariously, he goes on to say, it's going to be very specific.
Yes.
After calling it long on policy and a great plan.
Yeah.
Two specifics that I can't overstate the value of. He said, and I think it's going to be a plan that creates incentives. And I think it's going to be a plan that makes people happy. Two other specifics.
Uh-huh.
Other than maybe the hedge fund guys who make hundreds of millions of dollars and pay very little tax. I mean, those guys will not exactly love me. The thing that is interesting about this tax plan is it's a huge tax hike on hedge fund managers.
Yep.
He has decided that he hates hedge fund managers.
Yeah.
He has taken up the cause of the far left in terms of making people who make their money on capital gains pay their fair share in taxes.
Yep.
No other Republican in the race, except for some of the crazies, are starting to talk about this.
Yep.
But in for the last 800 years, no Republican would have ever touched that issue.
Yep.
Hedge fund managers are their bread and butter. People who make their money
the job
speculating
creators.
On the stock market, who are the exact opposite of job creators, but get credited as job creators all the time by Republicans, are like their bread and butter.
Yep.
That's who they... And this is dangerous, I think, because you know who is in bed with those people? Hillary Clinton. So this is going to be the wrong contrast for the Democrats to strike with him, but it's genius on his part.
There's a lot of wrong contrast with him and the Democrats. We've often talked about
genius.
Like, we've often talked, there's this issue and there's also the labor issue.
There's
too,
the labor
issue.
He's
talking
he's
about
against the TPP.
Yeah.
He is the guy. He is so interesting because he is, aside from being a sideshow
and
a racist sideshow at that, he is taking up the mantle of like a lot of sort of very progressive economic issues in a sort of bizarrely indirect way, in a way that's, he obviously has personal beef with hedge fund managers. P.S. This is not about the economy. This is about his personal issues with hedge funders.
Right.
And that's fine. But like, he's sort of showing, he's exposing the Republican Party as a party that is mineable for these issues.
Yeah.
You know, the no party of in the center is going to capture those people.
Right.
But we've always said there is room for people on the far right to move to the far left because all they have to do is give up their racism.
Yes.
And racism is something that you can think privately and work right. towards in your personal way without actually caring about. Because if you live in an all-white town filled with white people and no gay people, it ultimately doesn't matter if black people and gay people exist.
That's right.
You know? Like, yeah. that's less important than your ability to buy food. But
yep.
this is genius, and I think this is a sort of exposing an interesting culture war within the Republican Party that explains a lot of what's going on in Congress right now, because those Tea Partiers yes. in their sort of general opposition got elected by a wave of people who are mineable over these kinds of issues.
Totally.
Those people don't actually believe that someone like Jeb Bush is the right person
to be
the president, because they don't believe in corporate welfare.
Right.
And this is what he's not talking about corporate welfare broadly, but he is talking about corporate welfare yeah. here. And yep. that's something that he can drag people who are uninformed from the left. He can get some of those old Ron Paul people on board with.
Yep.
He can, you know, this is hilarious. Yeah. It's hilarious to watch this happening in their own party, and he's in the lead.
I know. It's great.
I mean, it's crazy. Also,
oh boy.
Don't worry. Donald Trump may be a racist bigot.
Yeah.
Ben Carson, however, willing to consider the idea of a Muslim president if we change the Quran.
If and only if.
Right.
Right. Because he initially said he wasn't.
Right.
He got himself into trouble.
He got himself into trouble.
Yeah.
So then he was like, no. I'm fine with it if we change the Quran.
Right. And then...
That's the one thing that you can't do.
And then hilariously took up the progressive mantle
oh my God.
For why a Muslim shouldn't be president.
Here's why he thinks a Muslim shouldn't be president. What we should be talking about is Islam and the tenets of Islam. When you have something that's against the rights of women, against the rights of gays, subjugates other religions, and a host of other things that are not compatible with our Constitution, why, in fact, would you take the chance?
Oh,
this is in the middle of that quote, which we cut out. He talks a little bit about how Islam, he would like to see someone, you know, somewhere in the Quran where it says it disavows Sharia law.
Oh, right. Yes.
It's like, yeah. I would like to see, you know.
Yeah. But it's hilarious. Now he only wants a pro-woman and pro-gay rights president.
Yeah.
Apparently, Ben Carson. Yeah.
Ben Carson, who, aside from being a brain surgeon, is famous for comparing Obamacare to slavery
uh-huh.
and in every way advocating against women and gays.
That's right. Yeah.
That's his man. That's what he does, guys.
He is.
He's a far-right candidate right. on those issues.
Yes.
He doesn't even know anything about the other
and
issues.
And that is why he has 20% of support.
Correct.
Is because yeah. of his hating
Where
women and gays.
Where does he rate himself on the scale of 1 to compatible with the Constitution?
I know. Don't know.
Also, yeah. in the same interview where he talks about this,
mm-hmm.
Which was an ABC interview, he gets asked, because he had called Kanye West brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Gets asked about
right.
his comments mm-hmm. about how Kanye West yes. is brilliant. And he says, I talked to him about himself and maybe some other people in the pop culture scene doing some music that might be uplifting,
oh,
that
sure.
might give young women a sense of their value and young men a sense of responsibility. So he's approached Kanye West about doing Christian rock. But then also... He was asked whether he thinks Kanye would be a good president, because Kanye West weirdly came out this week and said that in 2020 he was going to run for president.
Well, he said it actually at the MTV Movie Awards.
He said it at the movie
Awards. But he has... That was...
What?
Holy moly.
You know, when we were at the farmer's market this morning, 100 motorcycles passed by. Literally, like a team of 100 motorcycles
yeah.
passed by.
And they were not that loud.
No, it's crazy. Anyway, So he had announced that he was going to yeah. run for president
but
in 2020.
He's continued to say that he is actually doing it.
And so Martha Raddatz asked Ben Carson what he thought about this. And he said, I'm certainly willing... This is, by the way, on the heels of him not willing to consider a Muslim president.
Right.
I'm certainly willing to give him a chance. We'll see. He'll be able to explain things and see if he resonates with the people.
Mm,
so
sure.
he's willing to give Kanye West a chance.
Yep,
just not Muslims.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Kanye yeah. West... I guess self-promoters are better
sure.
than Muslims
Why
when
not?
It comes to
I think
president.
I also think Kanye West should run for president.
Yeah, but... For different reasons, I think, than Ben Carson.
Obviously.
Yeah. In any case, polls, guys. Polls.
Democratic polls.
Yeah.
Genius.
Bananas.
Crazy.
Crazy town bananas.
Yeah.
NBC Wall Street Journal national poll.
National.
National.
By the way, P.S.
P.S.
This is not a poll from New Hampshire
this is not a poll
or
from
some
New
other
Hampshire or some
socialist
other
enclave.
No.
This is America.
America's poll shows Clinton is in the lead. But her lead has been drastically diminished. She's now leading 42-35, whereas in July, that's only a couple months ago, she was leading him by 34 points.
And in June, which is the month before July, she was ahead by 60 points.
It's like, It's crazy. No, yeah. She had 60%, I think. She wasn't ahead
by 60. No, she was ahead by 60. Yeah, it was like 75 to 15. Yes.
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
You guys.
You guys. Exactly.
Oh, my God. Now, the thing that has been troubling Sanders supporters in the wake of these revelations is that these polls all include Biden, who hasn't officially announced.
Yes.
He's earning 17% of the votes in these. And obviously, when they take Biden out of the mix, more of his votes go to Clinton than Sanders. So she increases her lead. Yeah, she increases her lead.
She doubled her lead, basically.
She doubles her lead. It goes from 42 to 35 to 53 to 38.
Yeah.
However, let's talk about New Hampshire. Because the fact that this, what this shows at the national level is that Bernie's relevance and, you know, sort of machine is growing, if you will.
Well, and yes, because, so we'll talk about this New Hampshire poll. And he is ahead. This is a CNN poll. This is recent. He is ahead 46 to 30.
He's ahead by 16 points.
In New Hampshire. Right. Ahead. And he's ahead.
Not behind.
Ahead.
Ahead.
Yes. Important distinction.
Important distinction.
Yes. Joe Biden has 14%. So if you take Biden out and give all of his 14% to Clinton, which...
She still isn't there.
She still isn't there. So,
I think O'Malley has 2%.
2%, yes. Yeah, I was going to
say.
Sorry,
there was a typo in our notes.
That definitely can't be right.
No, that's O'Malley has 2%.
Martin O'Malley does not have 12%.
Jim Webb has 1%. And Lincoln Chafee and Lawrence Lessig, who we're going to talk about in a second, have less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
But here's where this poll breaks down into an interesting... Because we knew he was leading in New Hampshire.
Right.
He is now leading, though, in most demographic groups as well.
Yes.
And that includes women and moderates. So he is leading males... He's leading Hillary in males 56 to 20.
Right.
That's a huge
thing. And the common thinking is that
women
Sanders...
Women will vote for Hillary.
Right. Sanders leads amongst...
Like white men.
White men, liberal elites, rich liberals. Like that's...
Exactly.
That's the thought, anyway.
Right. Here's who he's leading amongst in New Hampshire.
Everyone.
He's leading amongst males, 56 to 20. He's leading amongst females, 39 to 37. Yep. That's a big oy.
Yep.
He's leading amongst liberals, obviously, 56 to 30. But he's also leading amongst
moderates,
37 to 31. He's leading her by 6 points
I mean, there
in moderates.
There's a moderate candidate in the race.
Yeah. You guys, there's several moderate candidates that are being polled in these races.
Right, exactly.
This is...
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Chafee is a Republican. I mean, if moderates wanted a moderate, they could... There's an actual person from another party that they could...
Well, if moderates wanted a moderate, they would have the perfect person in the form of Hillary Clinton, a moderate.
Yeah.
Like, this is not... She's losing women and moderates. That's her base.
She can't do that.
She can't do that.
Yeah.
Also concerning for her is that more than half of the Democrats there now say that they've made up their mind definitively.
Yeah, that's
only 41% on the Republican side have said that.
Yeah.
Now, it's harder on the Republican side because who even knows who they're going to get to vote for? There's 100
people.
But a lot of... a majority of Democrats have decisively decided... what they think, you know, who they're going to vote for. And then the Biden issue. So we talked in the national polls just seconds ago about how when you take Biden out of the mix, Hillary increases her lead. She does the same thing here in New Hampshire. However, Sanders still maintains control of the race. It only increases her lead a little, it only increases her support a little bit.
Right.
It ends up with him having 49 and her having 36 without Biden.
Right. So that's 13. It goes from 16 to 13.
Right. So it isn't... And, I mean, that means that he gained 3 points
from
the Biden,
group
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a great thing for her.
Yeah.
Now, still more people say that the New Hampshire voters are tied on who they think will ultimately win the primary. They 42% say Clinton and 42% say Sanders.
Right.
That is crazy considering that he is a protest candidate.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, I can't make that point more sort of importantly. No, I can't. Stress that enough.
Yeah.
We're talking about the inevitable candidate versus a protest candidate.
Right.
And half of the voters in New Hampshire think that he might just win.
Yeah.
Biden is gaining, by the way. So Biden is gaining momentum there.
He went from 5 to 14%.
Exactly. And I think, you know, more people think that Clinton has a better chance nationally, even in New Hampshire. 51% of the voters there said that she had the best chance nationally compared to Sanders' 19%.
Right. So that's not great.
And also more people think she has the most relevant experience.
Right.
But her favorability ratings are dropping.
Yep.
And Sanders' favorability ratings are growing.
Yeah.
And their likability ratings are sort of working in the same direction.
Yeah.
Biden's likability is going up. Clinton's is going down. Sanders' is going up.
Yep.
So this is...
Well...
This is getting out of hand, guys.
It is. In a good way.
In a good way.
But,
the best way.
But I think what the Clinton people are not taking into account here, because, you know... for months now, they have had their people sort of lowering expectations in that she may lose Iowa, potentially, because that's close. We don't have new poll numbers from there, but we've been reporting that it's close.
Right.
She may lose New Hampshire, but a lot of people are like, okay, well, she's going to win South Carolina, and she's got this Super Tuesday firewall.
Right.
But I feel like those numbers start to immediately turn once she loses those first two primaries.
And if she loses like
both of them,
it's not feasible for her to keep on as if nothing has happened if she loses both. Those are two diametrically opposed sort of enclaves of Republicanism.
Yeah.
So we're talking, if she, or I mean, enclaves of
Democratism.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about her losing a sort of Midwestern moderate state and then her losing, you know, what is in New Hampshire, like a fairly far left Democratic base.
Right, which is borders Vermont.
I mean, he has a real advantage there, but like, if she loses both of those,
yeah,
that means that she's not interesting to either of those groups of people.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that like her Super Tuesday firewall starts to crumble once she loses both of those places.
Perhaps after she loses the first one, because that's what happened last time.
Right, because the first one is the worst to lose.
Yeah.
Especially for her. She sort of has always acknowledged that New Hampshire was going to be tough for her against him, because it sort of is like home turf. He has always been polling well in New Hampshire. Yes, he's been catching. He's even polling better now than he was. But I mean,
even
when he was like at 0% nationally, he was close in New Hampshire. And that's just because of its proximity to Vermont and what the type of electorate is.
Yeah.
But the Iowa and the national numbers are what should be concerning to her.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that these trends should be concerning to her.
Right.
He shouldn't be able to beat her in every demographic group in New Hampshire.
No.
It's not that small of a state. Like,
no.
You know,
it's not like
three people.
No.
Now, let's talk for a moment about Lawrence Lessig.
Yeah, we mentioned him being polled.
You
may not have heard of him.
Exactly, because he is not running a traditional campaign.
No.
He's a Harvard professor.
Yes.
He's a constitutional law professor there. And he has jumped into the race on a single-issue campaign.
Yep.
He says that if he gets elected, he will step down in a year.
In a year. He's only trying to become elected to do one specific thing, and then he's out.
Electoral reform.
Yep.
So his goals are, he has three very simple tenets of his run. He wants to make voting registration automatic and get rid of any ID laws.
Yep.
And he also wants to make Election Day a weekend so that everyone can actually go vote.
Be.
We've been in favor of all these things for years.
Yep.
He wants to restructure congressional elections to create multi-member districts to kind of get rid of some of the gerrymandering issues they have during the redistricting process.
Yep.
And he wants to give voters vouchers so that they can publicly fund congressional and presidential campaigns so that we don't get stuck in this.
He wants to get rid of
Citizens United.
Yep.
And that's when he says he's going to step down, he basically means that when he gets rid of Citizens United, he's going to step down.
Right.
That's basically the thing that he's running for. But it's all electoral reform.
Yeah.
And not a terrible platform.
No,
I think it's sort of an interesting person to suddenly have in the mix, because I think there's room for, like, given the type of election season we're having, there's room for a lot of single issue candidates to jump in.
Yeah. Well, and he also, when he announced that he was in, because he was a Sanders guy,
right,
by the way. And when he got in, he basically sort of acknowledged that, you know, Sanders was pretty good on this issue, but he only entered this race because he wanted it stressed more, and he didn't think anyone was doing it appropriately enough to his liking, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely fascinating. I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's a target audience for this, actually. All Democrats, I think, would agree with him. It's whether this sort of untraditional, you know, way of going about it is interesting enough to anyone for them to actually want to vote for him in a primary, I guess.
It's not even this is not the kind of campaign you run because you're going to win.
You're going to win, exactly.
You run this to change the discussion, because once there's a candidate who's talking about electoral reform, then all the other candidates are going to get asked questions about it. So it's really just about kind of...
But he still has to get enough support for
to ask the other candidates the questions.
Yeah. Right.
No. But I mean, so that's... Anyway, that's an exciting thing that's happening.
It is. Yeah.
The Democratic primary is fascinating this year.
It is. It's more interesting than anyone thought that it could ever possibly be.
Well, usually Democratic primaries are so dull.
It was supposed to be a coronation, but we know how coronations go.
Yeah.
Been through this once before.
Exactly. meanwhile, the Pope's in America.
Yeah, you may have heard.
You might have heard, if you've just been near humans.
Because you
couldn't... Or media. You couldn't unhear.
Media. You couldn't unhear. I think Bravo was the only safe haven from Pope news this week, basically, because it was like 24/7 Pope, Pope, Pope.
Yeah.
So, you know everything.
Yeah.
Already.
He did what the Pope does. Talked about climate change, talked about the poor.
Yeah.
He today was meeting with sexual assault victims or sexual abuse victims
from the church.
So that's fascinating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He spoke to Congress, spoke to John Boehner, told him to resign, I guess. Spoke to the UN.
Met with homeless people.
He rode around in an adorable little Fiat, which is my favorite thing that he did. He went to Philly. People lined up to meet him.
Yeah,
a little girl handed him a letter. He was in Cuba right before.
Yep.
People got excited there too because they love a Pope visit in Cuba
as well.
They sure do. Yeah. And he, I think, to the dismay of certain elements in the Republican Party, expressed hopefulness about the change in relations that we're seeing between the U.S. And Cuba.
Well, he sort of helped broker that, supposedly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was one of the things that he had sort of already been, you know, involved in that issue to some extent.
Yeah.
But so that's, I think, why he kind of like went to both of these places in this trip, was to kind of talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
And Obama and Raul Castro are meeting at the UN.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. Also, it gave Bob Brady of Pennsylvania a chance to do some cup snatching.
Glass snatching. It's getting hot.
Guys, we've been now sitting in an unair-conditioned room for...
You know
an
what?
Hour now.
Now that we've been sitting in here for an hour, I'm going to let some of these Republican candidates at the debate
giving them a pass. I would have said anything during that debate to get out of the debate.
If anybody said anything totally insane in hours two or three of that debate,
might be okay.
I'm going to give it to them.
Yeah. No, I mean, I might have made up a story about my child as well if I had been forced to talk for 3 hours while
she
standing
was hallucinating
in a hot room.
About a child
exactly.
that she had. I mean, yeah. Anyway.
In any case. Bob Brady.
Bob Brady is...
Glass snatcher.
Not a snatch glasser.
No.
He's a glass snatcher.
He's a glass snatcher.
Yeah, he stole the Pope's glass after
like his
this
water
joint.
Glass.
His water glass. And he carefully carried the glass, which was still half full, apparently, back to his office where he sipped the water, then passed it around to his wife and two staffers. And then he later invited Senator Bob Casey, who's from Pennsylvania, into his office, and his wife...
And mother,
and they dipped their fingers in the water. And
Casey's office
confirmed
like, yep,
that this was true. Yeah,
that
happened. Yeah, exactly.
This is also not his first water glass heist.
No.
He stole a glass used by Obama at his first inauguration.
That's right. Not because he thought it was holy water.
No. I guess because he thought it was historical water?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, he's since emptied the water into a bottle, which he's going to use to bless his grandchildren.
Yeah, he's going to, you know...
Yeah,
splattered
and then he's
on
also sending the glass to a forensics lab to be dusted for prints so that they can authenticate it.
Right, because anybody can just say that they own a glass
that
the Pope...
He needs proof.
Right, he needs total proof. Yeah. Well, the Pope is eventually going to be a saint, obviously, because they have saint all the old popes, which means you've, like, performed miracles, which is bonkers.
Which is not a thing that you're able to do as a live, breathing human being.
Right. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, why not have a glass the Pope drank out of.
Sure.
Interestingly, though, unless the Pope blessed the water, which he probably didn't because he was only going to drink it, it's not technically holy water.
Well, yeah, and also, how obnoxious would it be if he was walking around blessing his own water glasses all the time? That sounds like a really obnoxious thing to do. Exactly.
No. Yeah.
The other news story that you might have heard about this week, because it was the only news story, was
other than the Pope.
Other than the Pope, was that this guy, Martin Shkreli, can't say his name,
no.
The guy who owns Turing Pharmaceuticals, which was a drug company.
Pharmabro, I think is what people are starting to call him.
Is what people are calling him. Uh-huh. Bought a drug that is used to fight toxoplasmosis, which is very dangerous to AIDS patients.
Yes.
And, like, you know, gouged the price from $1,350 to $750
like
a pill.
Thousands of percents, basically.
And then went on to say it was still undervalued.
Yes.
He got quite the social media response
to
that.
Yeah, he did. Well, they've lowered the price.
And they've since had to lower the price.
This is a good example of the...
They since have said they're
going
to lower it.
Said they're going to.
And they have not indicated to what extent they're planning to lower it.
But the internet seems to maybe have won in this case.
Yeah. Well, even Donald Trump said he looked like a spoiled brat.
A spoiled brat, I know.
And if Donald Trump... Donald Trump is the world's spoiled brat.
Yeah.
So that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
And it also... Hillary Clinton suddenly unveiled a proposal to cap out-of-pocket prescription drug costs. To $250 a month. And so that's...
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me. And also sounds like a thing she would have never done if this had never happened.
Yeah.
But it really has put a spotlight on how absurd our pharmaceutical situation is here.
Yeah.
Because, by the way, this is a drug that's available as a generic in other countries.
Oh, God.
Because it's a Toxoplasmosis mostly affects people in developing countries. It is very dangerous here to people who have compromised immune systems.
Sure.
So like people who are on chemo or people who have AIDS.
AIDS, right.
Or people who just got organ transplants, pregnant women, things like that. So it's got a small market, and that's why we don't have a generic for it, because it doesn't quite have the, like, you know, the market that you need to have competitors.
Right.
But it's an old drug. It's like 40 years old. So it's not like he came up with a miracle.
Right.
And he is saying, you know, he said he would slash the price, but he said, but he also warned everyone that in doing so, he might have to cut research for lethal diseases and fire staff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? So that what he, I don't want his company to be the one that invents the next life-saving drug.
No.
That's the last thing I want.
You'll never be able to
to have it. Exactly. But so he's trying to play the victim. Like, well, my company still needs to be breaking even. Like,
come on.
You're the idiot that bought a 40-year-old technology and are now acting like, you know, its value suddenly should place your money above human life.
It, I mean, in any case, guy.
That was not a great moment for Americans.
But good work, Internet.
Sometimes the Internet recently has been sort of periodically doing it right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, agreed. Yeah.
It's not the worst.
Yeah.
Here's what is the worst.
Oh my gosh.
This Volkswagen scandal. You guys.
Holy moly.
I have a Volkswagen, so I feel personally invested in this story.
And you have to get it worked on constantly.
Constantly. I have it. I love my Volkswagen so much.
So if Volkswagen goes away, are you going to be able to continue to get parts for it?
I don't know.
I don't either.
It's hard to know. Yeah. Fortunately, I don't have a diesel, because I've always thought that was a scam. Here's what happened. Volkswagen was secretly manufacturing diesel cars that would cheat during emissions tests.
Right, exactly.
So it had a sensor that could tell when it was being tested versus when it was being driven, and it would sort of like put the, you know, engine into like a low, you know, power mode, basically. Yeah,
exactly. It could tell when it was like on one of those tracks where they test it, as opposed to like actually just like being driven in the world. So it kicked into this thing where it would basically like, you know, be able to say that it had lower emissions or lower the emissions, but then it would be off when it would actually be driven. And it was, when it's actually being driven, it's actually 40% over
the emissions limit.
Well, not 40% over what it tested, but 40%
over the limit,
over the actual limit that the EPA has set, and over the limits that many other countries who sell Volkswagen have set. So, like,
because I read about this in the French newspaper, and the French government was pissed about it in the article that I read in Le Monde about it. And I don't know why I was reading the newspaper in French. I was just feeling ambitious, you know?
Yeah.
But so I initially heard about this as a scandal in France, and then I was like, wait a minute, it's happening here too.
Yeah.
But this is, like, sort of fascinating, given that Volkswagen was one of the only car companies that, in the face of our electric car bonanza, really invested in diesel technology.
Well, they did.
They were trying to convince everyone that diesel technology was more efficient and burned cleaner than everything else.
Right.
So they had been, and my grandfather even said this like 20 years ago. He was like, I don't know what they're doing. This is not the future.
No, and diesel has always been, the reason that we didn't drive diesel cars anyway is because it's harder to trap the emission, like it, because it has worse emissions.
Yeah.
But it does get better. It gets better, mileage.
Gas mileage.
So the thing that everyone was always trying to do with diesel technology was figure out how to trap the emissions.
Exactly.
And so once we decided that we had figured out how to trap the emissions, it seemed like a good alternative. But apparently we haven't figured out how to trap the emissions.
Also, have you ever been inside a diesel Volkswagen?
They're loud.
They're so loud.
Yeah, diesel engines are loud.
Diesel engines are really loud. That's why only trucks have diesel engines.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people are, I mean, besides the fact that it could totally bring down Volkswagen, a lot of people are thinking that it may bring down diesel too, because Volkswagen was really the one who was going for it.
There were a lot of car companies that offered it.
Right.
They had really invested in diesel.
They had invested in it, and they had really marketed it as a
solution. And they had not invested in electric car technology at all.
No.
So that
I think they do have like a Golf electric, but it's not like
that's not how they were trying to brand themselves.
No, it wasn't at all. So, you know, only 1% of the, I think, cars in the U.S. are diesel cars.
Right, it's a bigger problem in Europe.
A lot of people sort of see this as, at least in America, the potential into diesel because nobody's going to want
to. Well, it should be.
I agree.
Nobody should be driving fucking diesel.
We have better technology.
There's better technology out there.
If you're trying to get something that has better gas mileage, then obviously there's 100 other answers.
And I mean, we're about to be a country that has fuel cell technology.
I know.
So we don't even, like,
a couple car companies have fuel cell cars
coming out
on the road.
Yeah, Toyota does. Anyway.
So, yeah, the Mirai. It's super sexy. I kind of want one.
I don't because I saw one in person and I was like, this is so big. Why do we need this to be
big.
So... It's huge.
Yeah, it's big.
It's like a bus. It's like a huge sedan. It's like a sedan for giants.
Yeah, totally.
So in any case. Yeah. But it means that we're going to start having the infrastructure for fuel cell technology anyway.
Yeah.
So like, this is a thing of the past regardless, right. But this is... not good for Volkswagen.
No, because the thing is that they can basically, at least, and this is only in America, the EPA has the power to fine a company up to $37,500 per vehicle that breaches standards, and we have something like
a max fine of like $18 billion.
Just in America, $18 billion. We could also auto dealers are talking about suing. Mm-hmm. Auto owners are talking about class action suits, and we're only talking about America here. There's 11 million Volkswagens on the road worldwide.
Yeah, and they are common cars in a lot of the other Americas.
So we're talking about them being like sued for more money than they would ever
potentially have
or even be able to sort of have, you know, file for bankruptcy for, like, with the intent of...
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of people are saying that this is truly... they may just be done. This could be it.
Yeah. Their CEO waited to resign. He did not resign immediately.
Right.
And everyone at first was trying to be like, well, I didn't know that this was happening, which is a classic German corporation strategy, as we learned during World War II, when all of those companies were like, but I didn't know we were using, you know, concentration camp labor.
Right, exactly.
How could I have known as the CEO that we were doing that?
Right.
My job is to be in charge of the managers. And then the managers are like, but I was told to find cheap labor.
Yeah.
So how did I know we weren't talking about slave labor? Like, that's the kind of logic that German and often American companies operate with.
Say.
I was actually talking about this in... Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah.
Because I was talking about this also in reference to the Greek debt crisis with a friend while I was back home, because I was talking about how I felt like this really like showed Germany's true colors in a lot of ways, this sort of unforgiving way that they're approaching this debt situation. And he was like, yeah, but, you know, we're not any better. And I was like, no, we have the same corporate culture as Germany. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we would sort of privilege money over people is the problem.
Yes.
We do that all the time here.
Of course.
That tactic we invented. But Germany is the other place where the sort of culture allows for that.
Yeah.
And so, in any case, I had a long conversation about this because it was interesting.
Yeah.
But this doesn't strike me as a surprising German problem to have.
No, it doesn't. Definitely not. Yeah. In final news, this is a specific Florida problem too, by the way, that we're going to talk about. Whereas that Volkswagen thing seems a very German thing to have happen.
Yeah.
This is a very Florida thing to have happen.
Here's what was happening in Florida. There were two women that engaged in this activity, but only one of them got caught.
Yes.
A woman has been arrested for apparently brazenly riding a sea turtle around in July in Melbourne, Florida.
Yes. And we know that she did this
because photo proof.
They posted these photos on social media. Yes.
Stephanie Moore, age 20, was arrested when they responded to a disturbance. A disturbance call, and realized that there was a felony out for her arrest because she had been riding these sea turtles around.
Yeah, and the charge is molestation of a marine turtle. That's the name of the charge. Yeah.
So, in any case, this is... sea turtles are a protected species.
Right.
You're not allowed to ride them or in any way bother them.
No.
Only in Florida would someone think to attempt that, I guess. But this was another story that was really, like, all over social media this week.
Also, how exciting can that be, by the
way? I mean, well, as I think Kim Eaton, who's been on the podcast before, someone posted this on her Facebook wall, and she said, that doesn't seem like a very... Because someone said something about, like, this could be how we get to work from now on or something.
No.
She was like, that doesn't seem like an efficient way to get anywhere.
To get anywhere. No.
Riding a turtle.
No. That's not the plan.
That's not a plan to get... That's a plan to... A sitting still plan, if ever there was one.
It's how I'd like to go to work, because I would never get that.
Exactly. Yeah, if I could ride a sea turtle to work, I could just spend all day riding around on a sea turtle.
That's right.
That wouldn't be as bad as being at work, but that doesn't mean that if I needed to get to work, that would be the appropriate way to get there.
No.
Or if I needed to get anywhere, like across the beach.
Yeah, I know.
If I needed to get 3 feet away from where I was currently standing, that would be the worst.
Still a long ride.
That would still be the worst way to do it.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this
week. Oh my god, we made it. We're alive.
Ugh. Hopefully we also survive posting it, because that's the next
battle. Yeah, that's true. Your house isn't any less hot than mine is.
Nope. But we will be back now next week and that's for all weeks moving forward because now we're back on track.
And we're going to be blogging.
We're going to
crush this election. If you've been worried that we were going to muck this up.
We're not going to do that.
We're not.
We're going to start blogging frequently about the election. So stay tuned for that. There's going to be information on how to
it's going to be on a fancy website.
We're going to on our new website.
We're going to rule.
We're going to be doing it right.
That's right.
So stay tuned for that. We will obviously be posting it on social media. Mm-hmm. If you have made it to the end of the podcast and have not called your representatives about the Zadroga Act,
Do that.
Because that just seems like an easy way to
finish
out Monday.
That's right.
And then we'll talk to you next week.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.